The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners and let's step into the night to pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Everyone, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I don't know if I want the burden of a time turner.
No.
Like, there are times when I absolutely want it. You know, like, there are moments when I say, you know what, could have done that better. Should have done that better.
Oh, like just 10 minutes ago.
Just about 10 minutes ago, yeah. I had a situation where I said, you know what, probably should have done that better.
Yeah.
Mary okay. needed some help because of her knee.
Yeah.
And
Blake,
I said I would help, but just not 100% the way there. So I decided, you know what? Mary needed me to help put away some food in the freezer.
Because I'm hurt.
Because she's hurt. And before you think that I'm a total...
selfish Slytherin?
There is a little history here. There is some history behind... Oh.
It's fine. Just know that all is well in the marriage of Mary and Blake.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. It's just wish I had a time turn. Yes. I think one turn should do it.
One turn should have done it very, very well. So you could have just rip everything you said and then said, "Of course, Mary. I know your knee hurts. I'd love to help you."
Lily on YouTube here says, "What would Jack Pearson do, Blake?"
Yeah, that's what I pretty much say that once a week too.
Yes, absolutely. And I think back and I say, what would Jack Pearson do? And then
he wouldn't have judged his wife.
And immediately I hear
carrying a chest of food down a set of stairs that she probably
I said I would totally do that.
And then putting said food, hunching over repeatedly into the freezer.
And as soon as I realized I said what I said, and I was like, oh man.
Not great, Bob.
I knew I just stepped right in.
You know, but see, that I feel like would have been a simple use of a time turner. We think about the time turner in regards to Wizarding Wars and death and all this different stuff that it could have been used, and our minds just continue to be boggled. So
I have a bunch of questions about this.
Let's just first introduce this chapter
Absolutely. Let's do it.
It's chapter 21, Hermione's Secret. Spoiler alert. It's a time turner. Sirius has not acted like an innocent man. The attack on the fat lady, entering Gryffindor Tower with a knife, without Pettigrew alive or dead, we have no chance of overturning Sirius's sentence. But you believe us. Yes, I do, said Dumbledore quietly. But I have no power to make other men see the truth, or to overrule the Minister of Magic. Harry stared up into the grave face and felt as though the ground beneath him were falling sharply away. He had grown used to the idea that Dumbledore could solve anything. He had expected Dumbledore to pull out some amazing solution out of the air, but no, their last hope was gone. What we need, said Dumbledore slowly, and his light blue eyes moved from Harry to Hermione, is more time.
Excellent. Excellent. And the funny thing is that Dumbledore does have a solution after all is said and done.
Yeah.
But there is that one moment, that one slight moment where Harry says, oh man.
That he can't change people's minds. He can't overrule the Ministry of Magic, you know, the Minister of Magic. So there are some truths here that he is not able to do. But before we get into this episode and delve all into the craziness known as the Time Turner, we wanted to remind you that this episode, as well as all of our episodes of the Potterverse, are brought to you by our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. For any of you who've ever watched a show on PBS, you know how they say, like, this is supported by viewers like you?
Yes.
This podcast is supported by listeners like you. And those listeners are our friends at jointhenerdclan.com, where in addition to donating as little as $2 a month to keep this going and keep our other podcasts going, the people there, they get all sorts of perks. They get early access to our podcast. They get to vote on future podcasts. They get access to our book clubs where I'm covering the Bridgerton, the Duke and I. Blake is covering Voyager from Outlander. We have specialty podcasts that are only available for our patrons, all sorts of great things. Just knowing that you're making this happen, we're your mom and pop shop of podcasting. So thank you, friends, at jointhenerdclan.com. Let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
All right, so in this chapter, chapter 21, Harry and Hermione wake up in the hospital. We left the Shrieking Shack, we left the tree, we left the werewolf, we left Sirius, we left everybody, and they wake up from the Dementor time, and here they are. Harry, of course, is trying to tell everybody what the truth is. Nobody's really believing him. Dumbledore comes and shoos everybody away, including Madame Pomfrey. Whew. Kicked out of her own hospital. That did not go well. And he says, Hermione, it's time to use that Time Turner girlfriend. Hermione has to quickly explain Time Turner rules and magic to Harry. They go back, they actually save Buckbeak, and then they save Sirius, and it's pretty crazy.
And we have time travel.
Yeah. And there's specific rules to it, and it works out. And all ends well.
Caitlin here on Facebook says, Snape made me so mad this chapter. He hates Sirius so much that he doesn't bother using his ability to see if the kids are lying or not. Which, if he had used it, he could tell that they weren't. I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares. And that's why when I said a couple of chapters ago, maybe one, I can't remember now, but I said, this is still very much a schoolboy driven grudge, you know, that just it's like having that bully that you knew and you finally, when you're an adult and you look back 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and you were like, oh, dude, what I would do to you now. And he finally has the chance to do it. Finally.
And in his mind, he's still protecting Harry Potter. He's actually protecting all of these students. I mean, we see him when they have the Time Turner and they're going back and they're back at the lake. Harry gets to see Snape arrive with the stretchers. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
Oh, I'm going to take Ron. I'm going to take the kids. I'm going to take Sirius. Bippity boppity boo. I'm going to get an award. Like, this is going to be a great day. So here's Sirius, who's been a double crosser, like a secret agent all this time. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. He's protecting Harry Potter. Snape. Sorry, Snape.
Yeah. Severus.
Severus. Oh, goodness. They needed very different names. That was poor planning.
That's kind of like Sauron and Saruman.
Yes. Why? Why? Why make them say it with the same letter and make them so close? Ugh, kills me every time. I am like such a hardcore fan of that series, and I still mess those two words up.
Hey, quick aside, did you see that the numbers came out on the Lord of the Rings TV show that's being produced by Amazon? And it cost...
No, tell me more.
It cost $470 million for one season.
That's a lot of money.
$470
It's Amazon?
Million. Yes.
Well, you know who made a lot of money this year?
Yeah. our overlord, Bezos.
Yeah. Everyone's like, I'm stuck at home. How am I going to get things? Amazon.
Exactly.
Amazon was like, how do I get rid of all this money?
It's 10 episode series. That means they spent $47 million an episode. Put it into context. The last season of Game of Thrones, you think, dude, this is a big deal. Yeah. Huge, massive deal. $8 million an episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
So basically the CGI in this show is going to be bananas.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there are some startup costs when you create a brand new show to begin with, right? Like there are sets and things that you have to build. And
this
it's
is
in New Zealand.
Aside. Okay, aside, yeah.
Yeah, it is. But like $47 million, guy. That's six times the amount that HBO spent on Game of Thrones season 8.
I mean, the ring is precious.
Nerd! Good job.
Hey.
Good job.
I'm not a professional nerdy podcaster for nothing.
That might be a show we podcast about. I don't know. We'll see.
Probably. Yeah. Okay, so let's go back. I know that you're saying it's the schoolboy grudge.
Yes.
But I'm actually still standing with Snape right now.
Okay.
I'm still standing with Snape.
Say that five times fast.
Trying to protect Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Sirius has done nothing but prove that he is dangerous. I mean, Dumbledore lays it all out for us. Even, you know, Harry and Hermione learning what they just learned, 10 minutes ago. Sirius still broke into Gryffindor, came in with a knife, did all these things. So to Snape, if you're sitting there and like a judge is sitting down weighing all the things,
yeah,
things don't look good for Sirius. So Snape is really still trying to do what he thinks is the right thing. Now, mind you, I still don't love Snape. He is not my favorite. I still think that he is a weasel in many ways. But I'm sitting here saying he's really still trying to do
the right thing,
the next right thing.
I would agree with you. I think it is a little self-serving. I won't doubt it. I mean, it's not a coincidence that the chapter begins with Fudge saying, Order of Merlin, the second class, I'd say. First class, if I can wrangle it. Like, you know, I don't know if those things really matter to Snape, but it's not a coincidence that the chapter starts with that.
They would.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, so let's picture that you, Blake, have like a job that you don't get recognized for.
He's a weird cat, dude.
You're a Slytherin.
Yeah, but not all Slytherins are the same.
I know.
They're not all the same. Like, he's just a weird cat. Like, I don't know if that.
That's not why he's doing this.
Yeah, I don't know if that kind of recognition matters to him.
He definitely has a grudge, but I'm also saying that I think he's also like, this is a win-win. I get rid of my school bully. I save the day for Harry Potter. I'm actually going to be recognized. When, like, nobody's recognized me for anything. I'm just like this eternal wallflower. Nerd, picked on.
Yes.
And, like, I'm going to be a hero. What?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay, so you ready?
I like how Fudge does make room for Harry's exceptionalism here. He's like, well, you know, we've all kind of got a blind spot when it comes to Potter. So, like, you know, I understand. Yeah, sure. He has broken some rules here, and I know they got away with a lot here before, but I think we should just chill out, Snape. What do you think about that? I like that we're seeing some ugliness from the Ministry of Magic.
Already.
Yeah. You know, and we have seen it so far in this book.
Yes.
But it's even more so.
It's just going to keep getting layered. Harry's freaking out. Wakes up. Madame Pomfrey is like, Potter, it's all right. We've got Black. He's okay. Like, she thinks that that's why he's freaking out. Don't worry. He's going to be kissed by the Dementors any moment, Harry. And I'll be right back with the chocolate bunny that I saved from Easter. And he's freaking out. And he's yelling, you've got the wrong man. Hermione tunes in. And Snape says, I think the kids, like, minds have been scrambled.
Oh, yeah. That they've had the Confundus charm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's able to piece this together because... You know,
is that Snape covering for
no,
them?
No, I really think Snape thinks the kids have had the Confundus charm. I really think he thinks he's doing the right thing. I think it's a win-win to him. I'm doing the right thing, and I get to get rid of Sirius Black. I knew all along he was a bad egg. This isn't like, oh, I'm doing something malicious and wronging Sirius, even though he's done nothing wrong. No, he thinks you're the reason Lily is dead. You just, like, somehow Ron is all busted. I don't really care about Ron, but Ron's busted. Hermione and Harry are bonkers. You made them all nutty. it's like when Vernon's like...
You finally made him nutty.
You finally did it. So I think when I'm reading this, I think he thinks he's doing the right thing. I think he's like, obviously they've been confounded. Like, this guy's a really strong wizard.
Yeah.
You know, there's a werewolf out there. I've told Dumbledore we shouldn't be trusting him. Now he's turning into, he did. He just turned into a werewolf in front of these kids. Luckily I was there and saved everybody. You're welcome. You're welcome.
And I like here too, also, that when, Snape is trying to appeal to Fudge's sense of justice, you know, saying, listen, there's some stuff going on here. I think they were confounded, but you know what? I'm still a little pissed at Potter. And he's like, against all school rules, by the way, all school rules, after all the precautions put in place for his protection, out of bounds, at night, consorting with a werewolf and a murderer. I have reason to believe he has been visiting Hogsmeade illegally too. When the laws of the magical society that the Minister of Magic is supposed to uphold don't work, he then finally appeals to the actual school rules. And notice too that he puts being with a werewolf ahead of being with a murderer. It shows you, I think, a little, still we're getting, even Snape here has, even though he's been helping Lupin.
Oh, he's got severe prejudice.
We got some real prejudice here. You know, there's still that subtext, like there's still that just little bit of nudge that throughout this book continues to exist, whether it's from Hermione being like, you're a werewolf, you know, or, and then we have this here. It's still just that little undercurrent throughout this whole process.
One of the things that I also enjoyed is when Hermione's like, oh, Professor, all of the like stuff that was the truth happened when you were knocked out. And he's like, hold your tongue. Yeah. Don't say that in front of my important friends.
I wasn't knocked out.
No, don't tell them that.
No, that was you. You were knocked out. Loser. Not me. Hey, Snape, what's that bruise? Don't worry about it, okay? I didn't get hit on the way down every step.
Now, Dumbledore puts his employees in their place in this chapter.
Yeah.
So, Madame Pomfrey, she's freaking out. She's got these kids all doing all sorts of things, trying to give them chocolate, trying to take care of them. There's a werewolf. She needs to check on Ron. His leg's all busted.
Before we continue, Madame Pomfrey now came walking briskly up the dark ward to Harry's bed. He turned to look at her. She was carrying the largest block of chocolate he had ever seen in his life. It looked like a small boulder. You're awake, she said briskly. She placed the chocolate on Harry's bedside table and began breaking it apart with a small hammer. It's like, is she a mason? She got this block of granite and she's just hacking away at the thing.
Straight from Oak Island to Hogwarts, yes. I know, right? I love it. Oh my gosh.
You know, all I could think of during this time was like, was Lost in the Dharma Initiative.
Okay.
And I say that because like I feel like she had like a big block of Dharma Initiative chocolate.
Oh, yes.
And she's just unwraps
like
it.
Like a Sam's Club version of chocolate. Okay, that she got down from the kitchen. She was like, Dobby, I need you to hook me up with like chocolate.
We have to go back, Kate.
Sorry, I had to play that.
Okay, Madame Pomfrey. How big? I don't know. Big. Harry Potter's been knocked out by like 100 Dementors. Harry Potter!
Right.
Dobby goes and finds like the biggest piece of chocolate
comes
ever.
Comes out with it. I've got it for you.
Save Harry. But Dumbledore, you know, comes in and Madame Pomfrey's upset. There's way too many people in here. She's just trying to get the kids healthy and safe.
Do you think it's like good chocolate?
Of course it is.
You think so?
Dobby picked it out.
Because I was thinking like maybe it's that like that chocolate that you get from like, you know, like the weird chocolate that you get during Easter where it's like they're just pumping the chocolate out and it's might as well just be wax.
I don't really eat Easter chocolate, so I don't know. I eat jelly beans at Easter, but I only eat good chocolate.
Yeah, instead of it saying Hershey's, it says Herfies, you know?
No. Like. But this is when she tells him, Dumbledore and everybody, like, please leave. And he's like, Poppy, I need to have a talk with these kids.
Yeah.
He calls her Poppy.
Yeah.
And later in this chapter, Snape is, you know, trying to, oh, you don't know the half of it. And he calls him Severus.
Right.
So he's calling his employees by their first name, just like putting them in their place. Like, nah, you think you know best, Poppy, why don't you go to the teacher's lounge a little bit? Severus, you go with her too. Okay, I got this. And they're both like, what in the world? Let us do our jobs. Let us do the right things. No, I got this.
He does it here. I would like to speak to Harry and Hermione alone, said Dumbledore abruptly. Cornelius, Severus, Poppy, please leave us.
Yeah, bye.
And then Madame Pomfrey, headmaster, they need treatment. They need rest.
And chocolate.
I am HIPAA certified. You are not. And he's like, this cannot wait. Like, I love the calm that he just has constantly, except when he, did you put your name in the goblet of fire? Like that.
Well, we know that that's not the real Dumbledore.
That's
true.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
That was like a fail of all fails.
Harry Potter!
I can't handle that.
It's just the worst.
Goblet of Fire, movie, Dumbledore, the worst. Burr.
Even how they speak to him, it's just such a frenetic and frantic way that it's written. Like, Professor Black's telling the truth. We saw Pettigrew, N-. He escaped in Professor Lupin, turned into werewolf, N-. He's a rat, N-. Pettigrew, he attacked Ron. It wasn't serious, N-. But Dumbledore held up his hand to stead the flood of explanations. It is your turn to listen. And I beg you will not interrupt me because there's very little time. He said quietly. Like,
he's just got all the patience, man. Chill. Yep. You need to be chill if you are the headmaster of Hogwarts. Lord knows the situations that you go through on a regular basis.
All the hormones.
Oh, not just all the hormones, but like, how do you explain to Justin Fletchley's parents what happened?
So, listen, you're the only people that care about JFF, so...
I don't think he's coming home for Easter. I don't know how to... How do you tell Muggle parents?
Basically, your kid is frozen.
Anyway, okay, so let's get to some time Turner stuff.
Giant snake did it to him?
Yeah, but he's fine because he's not, like, dead.
He's just stuck.
So we're making these baby plants that we're going to actually slot, like, cut up.
And we have to be really careful because if you don't wear earmuffs, they'll kill you.
Yeah, but once we chop the baby plants up... He'll be fine. Dumbledore's totally chill, man. He's totally chill. Okay, so let's get to this time turn action.
Okay.
So all of this is happening. Big whir. Three times should do it, Miss Granger. Hermione's just like, Harry, hold on tight, spider monkey. We got this. You got it, Blake.
Oh
you're missing it. You're missing it.
I dropped it. Oh, man. That was not good. That was not good.
So,
hold on.
Say it out loud.
Still my favorite Twilight quote.
It really
hold
is.
Hold on tight, spider monkey.
It really is.
She throws this big necklace around him and has to quickly explain to him what in the world is going on. And I love this because they get to mirror and just follow their previous selves while she explains little by little the time turner, the rules of time travel, why she got it to begin with. Letting him know, of course, you know, we can't just go save Sirius. We can't, like, step in front of ourselves and go get the invisibility cloak. We can't do all these different things right now. We can't go snatch Pettigrew.
Yeah.
We can't change what happened that we saw. But we have to, like, work within the constructs of what actually already happened while staying away from ourselves, because that's just going to blow your flipping mind.
Sure, right. And she tries to appeal to Harry on two different levels. One, Harry, it's against the rules. Mm-hmm. You can't do it. That you're breaking magical law. It's, again, this happens a second time. Snape did it with Fudge. And then now we have Hermione doing it with Harry. You can't do it. You're breaking the law. And then when that doesn't work, she says, Harry, what would you do if you saw you burst into a room and say, gimme Scabbers? You would think, he's like, yeah, I'd probably think I was going crazy. Like, yeah, of course. And the other thing that Hermione says too is, McGonagall told me, yeah, you can't do that. There are tons of wizards that have killed themselves. There are plenty of times that they've killed. Dude, how many times have people gone back? Like, I would imagine that's probably something that you would hear about as a kid and be like, listen, you don't want to go back in time. You can do it. You don't want to do it because, yeah. You know, Jimmy down the street.
He got splinched and had issues when he went back in time.
Dude, Jimmy killed himself by accident.
Oh, Blake, this is just getting really dark. Anyway, yes. So Hermione is the one that figures out. She says, okay, we're 3 hours ago. What were we doing? Dumbledore mentioned that we can possibly save more than one life tonight. So let's figure this out, because I have no idea why he told us to be 3 hours ahead of time, but there must be something that happens right now that we have to figure out. She pieces it together. Buckbeak. Buckbeak's about to be executed. He is the second life that we can sell. If we get Buckbeak, we can fly him up, because we just learned that Black is in Flitwick's tower. Mm-hmm. Bada bing, bada boom. She pieces this all together. Lickety split. Mm-hmm. Well done, Hermione. Able to work under pressure, man.
Brightest witch of her age. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So they head on over. They figure out where they're supposed to be. They want to keep their eyes on Hagrid's front door. So they spend a lot of time hurry up and wait. You know, hurry up. Let's figure out where we are. Make sure we don't get seen by any of the process. And yet then we have to wait so we can see the cues of when we can leave or when Fudge and Dumbledore do enter the place.
Yeah, and they're waiting. They wait. It says they wait for over an hour. Mm-hmm. When everybody's in the Shrieking Shack, they're just sitting there waiting. Like you said, hurry up and wait. Wait for orders or wait for some kind of action to take place.
And Hermione's patience, but also, I mean, she's been wearing this time turner for almost a year now. So she understands that, how it all works. Because, you know, Harry's like, let's go sneak in and take Buckbeak right now. And she's like, no, they have to see him. Yeah. This all has to happen. We only have a special little part, or else this whole chain of events is going to be completely off. And they're going to think that Hagrid set Buckbeak free. So we need to do things by these specific rules of time travel. And I like how we have time travel explained to us in this manner, in this chapter. It's not just this whole blah, 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 blah. It is while they're on this adventure. It's while they're at these different locations, and we get to learn the different rules of it.
And I think the primary rule here is, it's, again, like Lost, what happens happens. Like, what happened happens. And that's that. You cannot change the past. You cannot physically alter the past. You have to operate within the confines of what has happened. So, for example, a couple of chapters ago, remember when they're going down the hallway to get to Hagrid's, they hear a slam of the door, mm-hmm. and feet rushing out as they leave the little hallway to go to Hagrid's. That was them.
Yes.
It always happened. Whatever happens, happens. Though I do have some questions about the mechanics of Harry doing the Patronus charm.
Okay.
Because you do get into a little bit of a loop here with the Patronus charm.
Well, let's get there. So, before we're with the Patronus.
Yeah, no, we'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. Go ahead.
We got Buckbeak. Buckbeak just being a brat. They're trying it so hard to get Buckbeak out of the way. It takes a bit of a time, and finally they get him out. Everything's fine. Yeah. Buckbeak's safe.
What did you think about the difference in the book from the movie? Mm-hmm. Where it was, this is when the milk jug thing splashes, and that's when I try to, we find Scabbers. But it wasn't, because in the film, Hermione is the one who thinks to throw the rocks and throw it at Harry and mm-hmm. throw it at the glass. Mm-hmm. In this, it just happens, right? Yeah. And even later on, Hermione is the one who convinces Buckbeak to get moving because she has the dead rats that Hagrid uses earlier on in the film when they have the class, right? Do you like the fact that in the film things are a little bit different, that Hermione plays a more active role?
I wouldn't say I like one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works well in both.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Yeah, okay. I think it works well. I understand. I get you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Then they get to the Whomping Willow, and they have to wait here as well, because, of course, all the things that happen inside, and they can't wait. They can't miss the time when everyone comes out. They have to. It's not like they were looking at their watches when they came out of the Shrieking Shrek and out of the Whomping Willow, so they have to wait carefully to see what's going on.
I love when Harry says, "This is the weirdest thing we've ever done." Like, and coming from him, the man who has been in the Chamber of Secrets and killed a teacher and done a whole litany of things, this is that should tell you like volumes about what's happening right now in in this chapter. And the fact that they can, Mary, as you said, explain the method of time travel, like the author explains the method of time travel and the mechanics of it the way that she does, in a really expository way, but in an interesting way. You know, Hermione is serving as nothing but more than information giver at this point, for the most part. But you can see things from afar. There isn't this all-knowing narrator like that does come in and out of the book, where it like validates Harry's thoughts, like Harry thought he was crazy, but we all know, like, but he knew he wasn't, or something like along those lines. Or people thought Harry was crazy, but he knew he wasn't. It's telling you the truth. In this chapter, everything's coming straight from Harry's perspective. There's no one saying, "Oh, you know, you're right, Harry," or "You're wrong, Harry." Especially when we get the idea that Harry passes out in the previous chapter and he thinks he sees his dad. There's no one there to tell you, yes, he saw his dad.
Mm-hmm.
He saw this, or he did not see it. I like that it just comes all straight from Harry's perspective.
So speaking about that, while Harry and Hermione are waiting at the Whomping Willow, this is when Hermione asks, like, how did you get passed out and nothing else happened? And he starts to explain that a real Patronus was there, and did you see who it was? No, I didn't see it. Who do you think it was? And he tells her, I think it was my dad. But your dad's dead, I know. Do you think he saw his ghost? No, he looked solid. Maybe I'm seeing things, but it looked like him. I've got photos of him. And how extraordinary that that is where Harry's mind went. You know what I mean? It's like, I guess that's my dad. That's the only thing that I could think that it was. It was, and it's also what he wanted it to be. You know, he wanted his dad to go out and save him. He wanted, he had his dad on his mind this entire time as he's meeting with his oldest friends and learning about how he and his father and his mother had been betrayed. So then the moment when he asks Hermione, we're going to let Pettigrew escape again.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I think this might have been probably the hardest thing for him.
Absolutely. And there's even this moment, too, where the story behind this chapter for us, ladies and gentlemen, is that I was actually reading this chapter to my family last night before we all went to bed. And there was a moment where Harry says to Hermione, Hermione, how can you just sit here and do nothing? We have to do something. And I started laughing.
Why?
I started laughing because it wasn't about Harry. It was about my bride. Because that is my bride. My bride sitting across from me, the one whose sultry, sulky, amazing voice you hear.
Oh.
Yes, that's right. A Jessica Rabbit-esque voice.
Oh, yes. In my leggings with my busted MCL, yes.
And your swish and flick
my
sweatshirt.
My swish and flick sweatshirt. Yeah, tell me more.
This is my bride to the core. We have to do something. We can't just sit here and do nothing. How can you stand it? Like, I couldn't help but laugh.
Yeah, that's
because
me.
Because my wife is a
patience
massive,
is not my virtue.
No. I got done telling her today, sometimes you can't do something. You just can't do stuff until you can. You know, and that's it. And she does not subscribe to that theory. There's always something to do. There's always something to change. There is always someone to save.
It's true.
It's very true. Very, very true. Very true. Sorry, I just had to say that little story.
No, it's,
because it's wildly true.
Yeah, it's totally okay. The time passes, the Dementors come, Harry is going to go, and he thought if he could see him and figure this all out, he's waiting for him. Where are you, Dad? Where are you, Dad? And then it hit him, and he understood. He hadn't seen his father. He had seen himself. Harry flung himself out from behind the bush and pulled out his wand. Expecto Patronum, he yelled. Out of the wand, out of the end of his wand burst, not a shapeless cloud of mist, but a blinding, dazzling, silver animal. He screwed up his eyes, trying to see what it was. It looked like a horse. It was galloping silently away from him across the black surface of the lake. Ugh.
Oh, and it continues.
I know. I thought that you might want to, because I'm realizing that this is probably the area that you wanted to say.
It is absolutely the area that I wanted to read.
Yeah, so go for it.
And it is my favorite part of this podcast, so it's okay. You just denied me my favorite part of this podcast. It's fine. It's no problem. I get it. where was I? Where were you? It stopped at the bank. Its hooves made no mark on the soft ground as it stared at Harry with its large silver eyes. Slowly, it bowed its head, its antlered head, and Harry realized, prongs, he whispered. But as his trembling fingertips stretched towards the creature, it vanished. Harry stood there, hand still outstretched. Then with a great leap of his heart, he heard hooves behind him. He whirled around and saw Hermione dashing towards him, dragging Buckbeak behind her. What did you do? And he said, and I just saved all of our lives.
Yeah.
Oh, easy. Excellent stuff. Now, I do have a couple of questions about this.
Okay.
Harry has the power to...
You got the touch.
Oh, yes.
You got the power.
Yes. That is a Transformers movie reference.
You're
not
welcome.
The crappy Michael Bay ones. The original Transformers
You're
movie.
Welcome.
Thank you. That's my girl. Harry has the power to... produce a Patronus simply because he saw himself do it before.
Well, and he also needed to have a thought. Think of a wonderful thought.
Yes,
any
but...
any happy little thought.
But here, he even says it. I knew I did it because I knew I already did do it.
Yeah.
So we get into a little bit of a time loop here, right?
I mean, welcome to the time turner problem. Yep.
Well, all of it can be explained away, right? For the most part. Buckbeak not dying and flying away, hearing the swoosh of the axe. Buckbeak disappeared the entire time.
Yes.
No matter what, he disappeared.
Yes.
Harry and Hermione were always in Hagrid's hut.
Yes.
Always. The thing, though, is that Harry knows he can do the Patronus because he saw himself. He saw that it was produced. He realized it was he that produced it, not his dad, which I think is very important. It's not like, oh, yeah, my dad's here to save us. Like, or no, it was like, I believed in myself.
Mm-hmm.
I did it. And it wasn't his Patronus is a stag, not because he thinks of his dad necessarily. It's just within him that he produces this stag Patronus. Like, I find that so special. Like, it's just such a beautiful moment where he realizes prongs. Like, is such a gorgeous moment. But, okay, we get into the loop because Harry is on the beach. He's trying to produce the Patronus. He can't do it. He disappears, but he gets saved by a Patronus that was produced by him.
Mm-hmm.
But how would past Harry know how to do it if he wasn't future Harry at the same time? You see what I'm saying?
No.
Past Harry has gone through time.
Which Harry?
The Harry that eventually...
Time Turner Harry. T.T. Harry.
Time Turner Harry goes through. And he goes through time and he goes back to the bank and he produces the Patronus charm.
Yes.
But how could he produce the Patronus charm initially? Like, where is the starting point?
Are you asking how does he know how to do it? He knows how to do the spell.
Yeah, but he can't produce one yet. Like, he knows how to do it, but he can't forcefully produce one yet.
Well, he didn't believe in himself fully, and he wasn't thinking of the right thing.
So, yeah, like a bunch of people are saying he knew the spell, he just needed the sufficient oomph. Yeah. I agree. But the issue is, see, it's hard to describe. It's hard to.
Then let's move on for a little bit.
All right, fair enough. I understand.
I've got no problem having time turner conversations, but I don't think you know what you want
to
say.
Is no, that I right? do. I do know what I want to say. It's hard to verbalize it because at some point Harry has to produce the Patronus charm. I understand that he's motivated to do it because it happens. Like, oh my God, I knew I could do it because it happened. But
so like, I know I can do things because other people have done it. I know that I can, my Minute with Mary company, for example, I know that I can get to the top status in that company. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I do know that I will because other people have done it. So it shows me,
sure.
I know it can be done. It's mm-hmm. not like I can fly. You know, I don't think I can fly. I don't really have good faith that I can fly, mm-hmm. but by Time Turner, Harry knows he can do it because he saw it. So it's almost like he saw someone else do it.
I think that's fair. Elizabeth here on Facebook says, okay, after Harry figures out it was him by the pond, he says it's okay because the first Harry thought he saw his dad. And after doing that, the time turner, the user remembers both experiences so that the solution wouldn't work. Hermione remembers all her classwork after from multiple classes she takes. I hope I've explained this well. Yeah, I think both of you are kind of in the same vein here, Mary. I think both of you are saying, well, Harry thinks his dad did it.
First Harry. Yeah.
And then, but Time Turner Harry realizes
it was him.
Oh my God, it is me.
Yes.
Okay, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Because Time Turner Harry is...
He's just a more knowledgeable version of Harry.
Right, so... All right, I guess I can reason that out in my brain.
Okay.
I can reason that out. Like, no one is coming. Like, I remember in the movie, Hermione is the one that's saying, no one's coming, Harry.
Yeah.
And Harry realizes, I have to do something.
Yes.
And I think I like that version better.
Book version?
No, movie version.
Okay.
Better. Mm-hmm. Because Harry's waiting. And it's more of a reactive, it's more of a passive presence. In the book, it's definitely more of an aggressive, like it's more of an active presence where Harry says,
I can, it is me.
Oh my God, it is me.
Yeah.
And he's alone. Because, you know, Hermione's off with Buckbeak, right? Mm-hmm. But I think Hermione playing an active role in this saying, Harry, no one is coming. And then Harry decides, I have to do something. Mm-hmm. Not because I'm waiting for my dad and, oh, I have this great revelatory moment that it is me. It's just, no, I'm doing something because I'm doing it. I don't know. Which version do you like better?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I'll let you know after I watch the movie. There.
Easy way out. Easy Thanks. Button. Fair enough. I'll take that answer.
Thank you. So they save the day. And they get Buckbeak to, because mind you, like even though he got the Dementors to go away, it's not like they can scoop up Sirius. This is when he sees Snape come with the stretchers and he comes and gets them. That still all has to happen because that was in the original timeline. But they are able to get Buckbeak, fly up to Flitwick, explain a little bit to Sirius, and then Sirius flies off into the sunset. I don't know if it's a really sunset, but in my mind, it's a sunset.
Well, I think in the movie, it's a sunset. So I'll take that. Sure, why not?
It's the moon.
Is it the moon?
Yes. Yeah.
Sure, okay, whatever. Stats are for nerds.
Well, it is nighttime because it had to be the moon.
Oh, that's true. Good point.
Because of Lupin.
Do you like that the...
You are truly your father's son, Harry.
Oh,
just bring on the Charmin so I can cry my tears inside of it because they're too cheap to buy real tissues.
Oh. Do you like that the goodbye with Sirius is so quick? It is so,
yes.
You know, like
We don't have time for all this mushy-gushy emotions right now, okay? Right. You got to get him out of here. And Harry and Hermione are pushing him out. Go, go, go. Like, limited time, buddy.
Yeah. I like it, too. I like it because it feels as though we're... Again, remember, we are in Harry's very steadfast perspective in this entire chapter. Like, there is no... There's nothing else here. And I think it's fitting for us as readers because Harry is losing Sirius very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we, too, are losing Sirius very quickly as readers. And I think it makes sense for his such hastily done departure. Like, mm-hmm. we need to go. We need to go mm-hmm. now. Let's do it. Yeah. Oh, man. When I was reading the stag portion, like, all of everything is coming together in this chapter. Everything, like the stuff with Harry's parents, Sirius, the stag, the Patronus, the whole thing with Scabbers, like it's all Buckbeak. All of the subplots have finally come to a head.
It's a beautifully written story.
It really, I think this might be the most tightly written book the author completes of the series. Everything is mm-hmm. purposeful. Everything is tightly wound up, mm-hmm. and it's not. Like, it's a nice, neat little bow. It's because there are things that are left open. This whole thing with Sirius is left open. Like, there's no real resolution other than the fact that he's alive. He is.
Well, at this point, you know it's going to be a multi-book series. So we don't need every single plot point tied up with a bow. But in this instance of the issues that we had in this book, it is figured out.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the book isn't done yet, though. We still have a little bit more to go.
Yes.
But I think that does it for our chapter recap.
Yes. All right. Ready for the different perspective?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Albus Dumbledore.
Albus!
Yes.
Did you go to the Kelly, concert lately? Go see her at all lately?
You know, sometimes. I don't tell people this, but I actually have my own time turner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that why you knew how many hours,
Yeah, yeah. I use it all the time. I mean, nobody knows this.
Okay.
I go to every single one of Kelly Clarkson's concerts. Oh, time turner, what? It's amazing. Oh. And because I spend so much time turning.
Uh-huh. Oh! Didn't.
I know how it works, and I need to see how far I can push Harry Potter.
What do you mean?
I could have fixed tonight.
You could have done it.
I could have bibbity boppity booted. We all know.
Knew. Yeah, you knew.
Like, I had to give that line, like, oh, I can't change people's minds.
Yeah,
listen,
right. Get out of here.
Imperio. Like,
sure, guy. Yeah, you can't fix it. Okay. Most powerful wizard on the planet. Yeah. You can't fix it.
I could take care of this in a snap. Probably with literally a snap, I could have done it.
Yep, you could have Thanos'd that.
Seriously. But I need to see Potter. I need to try things out and see what happens.
Sure, sure.
If it didn't work out,
time turner.
Hey! Easy button.
Oh.
I just need to see how far I can push him.
Yeah, that
I've
makes
got
sense.
Some things in store for him. And
I kind of feel like you knew what was going to happen the entire time, Albus.
Like,
I got the sense. I get a small sense that you knew when you were stalling, a little bit, making sure that.
Listen, man, I could have also gotten Peter Pettigrew.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of has a purpose in my plan.
Yeah, I feel you.
So between me and you,
just us girls.
Just us girls, man.
Yep, like, I gotcha.
I'm just straight chilling.
Got some Kelly.
I'm playing the long game. Like, you know how people hate playing Monopoly or Risk?
Yes.
That's my jam.
You're a big Risk guy.
That's what I'm doing right now. I'm just lining up my armies while I'm listening to Kelly, eating a little cake.
What cake are you eating today?
It should have been chocolate, but for some reason, they're all out. The end. I don't know.
Good job. Good job. So, good job.
before we get into our emails, we wanted to let you know that this portion of our podcast is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. In addition to geeking out about all things Harry Potter, I love to play with makeup and skincare. And for you, our amazing listeners, I have my favorite mascara. It's the Twisted Epic Mascara. It has two wands. Like, hello, talk about, you know, the Elder Wand. Like, this is flipping... both. You get them all. You can get it at a discount. MinuteWithMary.com/discount. I'll give you 15% off my favorite mascara.
All right, we got some emails. You ready for them?
Sure am.
Let's do it.
Oh, Miles here.
This one comes from Anna Lee. She says, new subscriber here. I absolutely love your podcast. So here we go.
Yay, thank you, Anna Lee.
And I'm excited to join the Nerd Clan.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Awesome. Do you feel like Harry's trauma is not fully fleshed out in the books? Psychologically speaking, a child that is not given love and affection, especially physically at a young age like Harry, has serious negligence and trauma issues, yet he seems to be able to function pretty normally as long as no Dementors are around. I understand since this is a children's novel, the author may maybe not want to have delve that deep into mental health, but I'm curious if you agree and if you think there are some ways that you think the author could have added Harry's trauma in a child-friendly way.
I think we get a lot of that in 5.
Absolutely.
Which Blake and I like to call emo Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Not Order of the Phoenix, emo Harry. In my mind, yes, this especially in these first 3 books, aimed towards children, beginning of the series, didn't want to get too dark and deep, right? But also Harry is still young. He's 11, 12, and 13. And he is thrust into this magical world, finally has friends. There's candy, there's chocolate frogs, I get a magic wand. So, you know, yes, he's gone through significant trauma, and continues to.
Correct.
But he's also really distracted and still has a pretty young mind.
Yes.
Where he may not be able to digest and understand and even react to the trauma of his past. So I think that the author, as her audience matured and as her, just as the story's matured and as Harry himself matured, you know, she does get into this. And that is why I think, you know, we see the emo Harry that we get in 5. But great points, Anna Lee.
Yes, this one comes from Lacey. She says she has 3 questions. 1, why doesn't the Ministry of Magic use Veritaserum in trials and courts? Oh, that's a good question. I wonder if there is a law against it. I wonder if Veritaserum is one of those things that, like, you don't do unless you need to do. Right? Like, why don't the courts promote torture here? Like, in
well,
the
I would
States?
See it more as like a lie detector test here, but they do use those, right?
Good. Yeah. I mean, but a lie detector is not permissible in a court of law.
Why?
Because it's not. It's not 100% reliable. You can't say, okay, lie detector test said, yeah, you did it. Sorry, you're guilty. Like, it's not admissible in a court of law.
Is it always right or wrong? Can't people like finagle a lie detector test?
Yes.
So maybe people can finagle Veritaserum if they're really skilled, if they are double agents. Maybe it's the same thing. If people can do like Veritaserum on a 14, 15, 16-year-old, probably works.
Yes. Maybe it can be manipulated.
But maybe it's just like our lie detector.
3, how did Harry Potter didn't he die immediately when he got stung by the basilisk venom since he is a Horcrux, but the other Horcruxes took like 5 seconds?
Wait, I don't understand. Say it one more time.
Why didn't Harry Potter die immediately when he got stung by the basilisk venom in book 2 since he is a Horcrux, but the other Horcruxes took like, I don't know, 5 seconds? Fox would have been too late.
I don't know.
That's a good question. That is a slight loophole, I think. Why wouldn't... okay, in, even if... why wouldn't the Horcrux in Harry die as opposed to Harry die?
Because a fox stopped it. I just don't think that there was enough time. I think if Harry had died, then the Horcrux of him would have died too.
Yes.
The fox came in.
Yeah, but why wouldn't the basilisk venom kill the Horcrux that was in Harry?
Because Harry didn't die.
Okay, fair enough. And lastly, why does Snape hate Harry? Since he loved Lily and Harry as a product of her, then shouldn't it be the opposite?
Because Harry looks just like James and has a lot of the same characteristics of James.
Good point. Yep. He's a living embodiment of the embarrassment that James caused in Sirius.
And then Sirius, did you not Severus. Want to ask the other question?
No, okay. I just, I don't.
Okay.
I don't think that's appropriate okay. for this discussion.
Okay.
And the last question comes from Brad. He says, I have a few questions about werewolves in Harry Potter.
Oh my gosh, yes.
In the last few chapters, it appears that Lupin only transforms into a werewolf when he actually sees the full moon. If that is the case, why when it is a full moon, doesn't he just stay the night in a darkened room or in the Shrieking Shack so he doesn't transform? Also, the next day he seems perfectly well enough to leave Hogwarts, but earlier in the book, I got the impression that he would be out for days at a time. How do you explain this?
Blake, go for it.
I don't think it's when he sees the full moon, because he had to go to the Shrieking Shack to go and transform, right? Like, and that's where he had to stay. That's why the Shrieking Shack was created.
I think it's when the moon is out, because it was hidden by a cloud, and then it wasn't.
Good point. Good point. That might be a little bit of a loophole as well. Like, does he have to be in the physical presence of the moon?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think it's just when it's out.
That's it.
Moon's out.
Moon's out.
Yep.
Moon's out, werewolves out.
Yes.
All right, fair enough. We got some other questions here on the live chat.
Remember, if you are in the live chat, add a lightning bolt emoji and then pop your question below. Even if you already asked it above, you can rewrite it.
Yes. Amanda Jane says, did Dumbledore know they would need to turn back time before he left the castle for Hagrid's hut?
I don't think so.
I see. I don't know, because he
well, maybe
he acts in a very specific way.
You know what? He probably had already gone through this day like 5 times.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the that's a good point. Here's the thing. I guess when does Dumbledore look out the window and see that Buckbeak is not there, and is that when he catches on? Like, oh wait, because he has to know, right? That like he does know that Hermione has the time turner. I don't know if McGonagall told him that
she
had.
Yeah, he knows. All the teachers know.
All the teachers know.
Yeah.
What Snape doesn't know.
How does Snape not know about the time turner?
Well, he never actively says anything about against.
I feel like all the teachers would have to know because it would have to be approved.
Good point. All right. So he knows that Hermione has a time turner. Let's just say for the sake
of argument. But no matter what, Dumbledore knows.
Yeah. No matter what, Dumbledore knows.
Yes.
I think there's a moment when, as he's walking down to Hagrid's hut, he sees Buckbeak, right? And then all of a sudden, he's looking out the window when he turns around and Fudge has to sign the document. Mm-hmm. Probably looks out the window and sees that Buckbeak ain't there.
He's like,
wait a second. Ah. Oh, I see what happened here. And then that's all of a sudden when he turns and says, whoa, McNair, whatever the guy's name is.
Yeah.
You know, you got to sign this too. And then all of a sudden he comes down and he says, yeah, search the skies. Do whatever you want. I could go for some tea. How about a large brandy for all of us? Would you, Hagrid?
Okay, I like this.
I think he sees it and that's when he catches on.
Yes.
And that's why he's so calm about the whole thing, because he knows that it's already happened.
Happened. Perfect.
And it
Love
has
it.
To happen by a specific time, which is why he says everybody
3 hours.
Out. Everybody out.
Oh, yeah. But then he also knows 3 hours should do it, or 3 spins should do it.
Yes.
Okay.
And I was thinking, like, okay, why aren't time turners used throughout history? Like, why couldn't someone from the Order of the Phoenix use a time turner to go back and stop Voldemort,
mm-hmm.
right? Before the Wizarding Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't we go kill baby Voldemort, right? I was reading about it, and I don't know if this is like a post fix from the author, but she says it's only safe to go back about 5 hours in the wizard world. You can't go much further than that. Because if you do, you start causing time fluxes and bodily harm to yourself. And she says it's not safe to go much more than 5 hours. The other thing I wonder too is like, okay, if one turn is 1 hour, let's say if somebody did want to go back and kill baby Voldemort, regardless of the 5 hour thing. You would have to sit there and turn that bad boy for a long time. You have to keep track of how many turns you got. And the other problem that you have too is for the amount of time that you're spending turning this time turner, that's just more time you have to keep turning.
So I will tell you this. Time turners come back in the Potterverse. You have not found it yet, Blake.
No, I haven't.
I will tell you that our podcast, The Potterverse, and those of you who are Potter fans, you know what I'm talking about.
Okay, fair enough.
The Time Turners will come back. We will have more Time Turner discussions in the future.
And like, how did Professor McGonagall like just convince the Ministry of Magic? Yeah, you know what? Why don't you just give me that thing? Because, you know, there's this girl. She's really smart. Never mind all them Ravenclaw kids who were like wicked smart too. But this girl, she's super wicked smart.
I mean, it's McGonagall and she has a lot of pride for Gryffindor. So maybe she thought it would earn Hermione more house points or something.
Yeah, true. All right, Lumos, you got to move. Yeah.
Elizabeth Ford Main says, how did Hermione not see herself going in between classes when she is using the Time Turner multiple times in the same real time? Boggles the mind. See, here's the thing. I think Hermione could have seen herself and not freaked out. So previous Time Turner Harry would have freaked out had he seen Time Turner Harry, because he didn't even know time turning was like a thing.
Yeah.
But if Hermione, and this is an example that does come up in the movie, you know, when Hermione's by the pumpkins and she hears a little snap and turns around. Oh, I thought I saw something. Oh, no, never mind. Her mind isn't boggled because June 6th, non-Time Turner Hermione already knows the Time Turner exists, knows that if she does bump into her former self,
it's okay.
It's fine. I know, yeah. I have the Time Turner. I'm just going to like keep moving on with my life.
Yes. Okay. Angela said, so is Sirius never cleared and is he still wanted?
Yes.
That sucks.
Yes.
For the time being. Yes. Patricia says, personally, I don't think Albus knew what was really going on until he spoke to Sirius.
Mm.
That's something also. Rachel says, do you consider the time travel in the Potter book similar to the way the time travel is done in the MCU or Back to the Future or a hybrid of both? No, I don't. Back to the Future is bananas. The rules in Back to the Future are crazy. It's just anything goes. You could do whatever you want. And you can change the past. You can alter timelines. And in the MCU is somewhat similar. I would see the MCU as the hybrid between Harry Potter. Like, if there's a sliding scale, right, of Lost, which was what happened, and Harry Potter, which is also what happened, and Back to the Future, which is there are no freaking rules, you do whatever you want, and everything's okay. The MCU is kind of halving it. The MCU is like, there's a timeline of events, and when you take things out and when you do things differently, that creates alternate timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And those timelines exist. But the problem is everything in the original timeline starts to fall apart. So you have to make those alternate timelines disappear in order for the real timeline to go forward, which is how they're able to get away with taking all of the stones and bringing, and then they have to bring them back to establish the real timeline again. So
hold on tight.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay. Well, hold on. I got to hit my button.
It's okay.
Here. Okay. Go ahead.
I'll just give you this.
All right.
Cursed child.
Okay.
Just wait. Just you wait.
Hold on to your butts.
Yeah. Okay. And for those of you who haven't read, just wait. We will cover it in the very far future because we're going to read it after the books. But
yes. Okay.
We are not done with Time Turners.
Let's see. Kyle Ann here says, also in Outlander, what happened. Yeah, fair enough. Let's see. Lily says, do you remember a time when the same Time Turner is used by other people in the whole Wizarding world? I don't know what that question means, so I will leave that to Mary.
Do I know? Remember a time when the Time Turner is used by other people?
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening?
No, I was listening. I just don't understand the question either. Sorry, Lily.
Okay,
I'm not much use.
All right. Okay. Yeah, I think that's it. We're at an hour, so it's time to close this bad boy out. All right.
Brain.
Yeah. See, that's the problem that you have when you introduce time travel into your story. You either have to define every single little rule of time travel, or you just have to say, you have to go back to the future route and just say, okay, screw it. like whatever goes, goes.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Because then you can start making up answers by yourself and everything is legitimate.
Well, that's why there are specific rules to the time turner. You can't go too far back. Don't be crazy.
That's true. Very point. Very good point. All right, let's close this out, shall we?
We shall. Friends, we are wrapping up this story. So soon. We've got one chapter. That's it.
Yeah, we got one more chapter left.
And then we're done. And then we will watch the movie.
Yes.
We will have a live commentary, like we record ourselves watching the movie audio-wise. And that is only available to our friends at jointhenerdclan.com.
Correct.
And then we will do a live podcast discussion about the movie. And then we move on to Goblet of Fire.
Oh, man. I have not read that book yet.
You're going to enjoy it.
I don't know.
Just know that it's hanging at Hogwarts. That's what they need to call the Goblet of Fire. Hanging Nothing really happens, but we're hanging at Hogwarts. Okay. So much love to you all. Thank you, all of our friends at jointhenerdclan.com, for once again making all this possible. My name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.